Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, there's that music. Happiness music. We didn't have that yesterday. I missed it.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into the DNVR Nuggets podcast.
Let's freaking go.
Taco Tuesday edition of the show, presented as always by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. You can use promo code DNVR whenever you sign up. Gamble along with us. Win some money with us. Get rich with us. All of those fun things. Today we begin a new era of the DNVR Nuggets podcast, the prospect portion. We start ramping up for the draft today. We were supposed to do it yesterday. Little news nugget drops in the middle of the day, change the plans. But today we get into it with Tari Eason, Jalen Williams. Going to talk a little Andrew Wiggins as well to open up the show. But first, let me introduce my panel of esteemed colleagues down below me wearing all green. It's Brendan Vogt.
Hey, fellas, how we doing? I'm excited to do yesterday's show today. I also tried to do tomorrow's presser today. I'm just going to admit that. Pull the curtain back. Rolled up the ball arena. It's a Tuesday, so.
Stop by Lightshade slightly less frequently. Over here we got D-Line Co.
Yeah, Brendan, even I knew that, and I'm not a credentialed reporter. Yeah.
Thought it was Wednesday, you know? I'm not perfect.
You know what? I actually can't make fun of you. I've, on numerous occasions, gotten the wrong day when I've introduced this show. So today is a Tuesday edition. I got it right today. And then over there, the handsome one, still single. Lady, still single, Terrison Wind.
Yeah, for five more days.
Five more days.
Get at me if you're interested.
Guys, we're going to talk about those prospects today. I told you yesterday, like, we were going to get all of it out of our system with the Tim Connelly stuff. I'm sure there'll be some news and nuggets that come up. But I didn't want to spend the whole week contextualizing what it meant or this or that. Like, you want to get it all out. You want to share all the perspectives. I think all of the perspectives are now out there. I haven't heard a new one in the last 24 hours. So I think they're all out there. Take that with what for however you want to. You can go back and listen to those shows if you want to kind of get those perspectives. I will say that tomorrow, Josh Kroenke is scheduled to speak. And this is meaningful because it's been a while since we've heard him speak. And also, when the news went down, one of my first thoughts was, is he going to talk to us? Like, is he going to, or is this going to be one of those ones that just goes and we don't hear from anyone, which I would consider to be somewhat of a, you know, like a cowardly move. But honestly, this was a thing. The Nuggets came out right away, say, hey, he's going to talk. He's going to address the media. I thought there was a really cool thing. Harrison, what do you sort of anticipate in this first meeting with Josh Kroenke and the media in several years?
Well, I was trying to go back and find the last time Josh Kroenke spoke to the media in a formal setting, like not a radio interview, not a appearance on the Road Trippin' podcast. And I think the last time he did a formal press conference and like sat at a podium and took questions was when Paul Millsap signed here.
No way.
In 2017.
No way that was it. You have to.
And after that, he took a group of reporters aside after the Nuggets drafted Michael Porter Jr. at that intro presser, and we talked to him then. That was in 2018. I could be wrong. I feel like I would have been there if he did have a press conference since then. I couldn't find it, though.
Vote, it doesn't feel like it's been that long, right? Like, the Paul Millsap arrival, I mean, that was a lifetime ago. I don't even know. Were you out here by that?
I was. But I think Harrison's right. I mean, that's the only time I can remember an official presser with him, or the last time I can remember one. I also think I saw a snippet of that. Chris Dempsey asked him a question about a practice facility in that 2017 presser, and he's on the record saying, yeah, there's a couple of deals that we're excited about.
I can't wait to follow up on that tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, it's been 5 years, so that's a follow-up I've got for sure.
I mean, here's the thing. Tomorrow does represent a Facing the Music day for Jack a little bit. Like, I don't know how much he's been avoiding media, although the Comcast deal, there's like a reason. That's the number one reason. It's funny. Everybody's going to ask. It's about Tim Conley, right, and the new change of directions. But this is really a chance to ask him about, hey, like, what is the obligation of an owner to a city? And, like, if that team is unavailable, like, I know it's a bad deal or that's tough or whatever, but what is the obligation outside of the business portion of this? Is there one? That's a question he hasn't answered. So, D-Line, is there anything you hope to hear tomorrow when we hear from Josh?
I don't know. This is like a difficult
situation. For that?
Yeah, because I mean, there are things that I want to hear, but I don't know if any of this is a I'm going to hear words, but unfortunately I've already seen the actions kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what I can hear from him that will make me feel any better about the situation outside of just, you know, I mean, I definitely want to hear him like reaffirm his devotion to the Denver Nuggets and the fan base and all of these things that will feel good to hear, but unfortunately are going to feel a little hollow since we saw the end of the movie first. So I don't know. I don't know what I want to hear.
What if it's a movie, you know, like that's done in reverse, like Memento or something? You see the ending, you don't know what.
Yeah. So like he comes back in and he's like, we've rehired Tim Connelly. We're like, whoa, this is amazing.
I hope, because I've seen a lot of people saying like, oh, it's going to be, you know, kid gloves, or he's only going to field questions for specific people. I mean, the whole media is going to be there. I have to imagine there's going to be some hard questions asked. I mean, tonight I told Harrison and I were talking before. I'm like, this is one of those pressers. Usually a presser, you kind of come in with a question or two. This is one where you probably dedicated a half hour, an hour to like jot things down, be like, go into the presser with your like list of things you want to hopefully accomplish. The one thing I will say, I hope the presser lasts a while. Like sometimes there's this like default length to a presser. If it's a regular every day, you're trying to get Jokic 10 minutes max, like it's maybe 7-8 minutes you get. And then PR is like last one, you know, like let's jump in. But if it's one of these ones, 20-30 minutes, like you should expect to be able to speak for a long time. Do you PR voice? Is that what
I did? That was a great impression. I was appreciative that when the Nuggets did the exit interviews with Jamal Murray, with Michael Porter, with Tim Connelly, with Mike Malone after the season, those really went on for as long as anybody had questions.
Right.
I don't know if we're gonna get that with Josh tomorrow, but I think it would be lengthy.
I'm going to take slight credit for the Tim Conley Malone pressers being so long. If you guys remember, Sam Presti did an exit interview, and it was 2.5 hours.
See, that's too long. That's just too long. That's like, at that point, it's just a bit, you know?
Yeah, it is. But 2.5 hours. Think about how long of a presser if you're just sitting there for 2.5 hours. But I did send that one both to Tim and to Nuggets PR and just sent it saying like, hey, you know, the standard has been set. Like,
there's a new bar.
There's a new bar, 2 hours. I hope that it's a lengthy presser tomorrow because Josh, there's a lot of things people I think are very interested in. And I'm excited to get to them. I did want to go on a rant today, and it's funny. I went to get lunch today, and as I'm driving, I'm listening to Zach Lowe's pod, and yesterday I was supposed to do this. Yesterday I wanted to do the whole talk about the Warriors because to me they're just so impressive, and what is happening with them this season is so important. I really believe this. So important for the league to take notice, and Denver in particular to take notice about their success this season. And I'm listening to Zach Lowe's pod, basically given a very similar sort of like speech or encapsulation of why this is so intriguing to him. And it made me like, I was like, okay, I wasn't going to do it, but I gotta go into it. Eric, you famously picked the Warriors to win the title here. You're going to end up looking like a genius. Maybe part of this has to do, wait, we'll see. I think the Celtics still can challenge them, although the Celtics have dropped like flies and as like have all of these teams. But nonetheless, the Warriors look better every single time they go out. They championship pedigree. I like your thing about, can this team that dominated everyone when they were healthy, they go away for 2 years and you think, was the magic gone? Turns out it's not. There's something about the Golden State Warriors because they are talented. They have Steph Curry. They have Draymond Green. They are talented. There's something else about them that makes it so they reach their ceiling every single year, no matter who you get. And no, so few teams you can say this about. Even championship teams, it's almost like they force their way through through will and this or that. The Warriors just feel like they figure out the best utility of themselves, all buy in, and then achieve it. And I think that nobody is better indicative of this than Andrew Wiggins. And this is where I don't want to get into relitigating the Tim Connelly thing, but I was thinking about this over the last 2 days and how important, like, Bob Myers makes that move, the GM, to bring in Andrew Wiggins for D'Angelo Russell. Nobody looked at that deal and said, this is going to be a great one. Like, they looked at it and kind of thought, like, okay, well, Andrew Wiggins is salary and it becomes this, and then they could flip it and they could pair it with this. And you started thinking this. Nobody was like, oh, Andrew Wiggins provides the thing that they're lacking out there. Like, that's Andrew Wiggins is the defensive ace and rebounder or whatever. But the more optimistic people that speculated thought, you get it into the culture. You get him into the culture and let's see what happens. Let's see if you get the best of him. Last year, work in progress. This year, unbelievable how good Andrew Wiggins is for that team. Honest to God, unbelievable how good he is. The biggest Andrew Wiggins supporter could not have envisioned him becoming this version of himself that fits so seamlessly into a team. And this is one of the things I'm talking about. You send Andrew Wiggins to another similar quality team, but where the fit is not certain and, okay, he's had some baggage. It does not happen this way. You send him into that. We build a great culture. You cultivate it. And that comes from not just from Bob Myers. That comes from ownership. Comes from Bob Myers. It comes from Steve Kerr. Comes from Draymond Green. Comes from Steph Curry. All of them together create a cohesive culture that when Andrew Wiggins arrives there in 1.5 seasons, all of a sudden he's a Finals MVP level player on this team. And you look at it and you go, like, my God, like, Andrew Wiggins is incredible. I can't believe it. I just wanted to bring it up because, to me, everybody, fans, especially over the last 10 years, look at basketball as this building a model plane. There's instructions, and this works, and this works, and you put this piece here, and this, and everything makes sense on paper. You just have to get it out into the universe to work. It's not how it works. The longer you're around basketball, the more you see it. It's not that. It's about how do you get these guys to all be moving in the same direction. The Golden State Warriors have done that better than anyone I've ever seen outside of San Antonio, and as a result, they're going to be headed to, what, their sixth finals in 8 years?
Yep.
Absurd.
It reminds me a lot of what Jokic said when he said, we got to start doing everything together. I just felt like what he was trying to articulate was this kind of brain, you know, the same wavelength thing that they're on as competitors on the floor, but then the work they put in off the floor. You touched on this, all much easier to do with the right stars in place. Golden State has a trio of perfect ones for this.
They have a duo of perfect ones.
Yeah.
Who's the trio? Is it Clay?
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. I kind of just threw Clay in there, but I see your point that Steph and Draymond are more leader types. But all the same, these three guys being your most talented guys are of a certain personality type that's conducive to this. And it, for me, it's the sort of bigger point I've been on with Denver the last week is Golden State drafted Steph and a lot of things went right for them. It wasn't just Steph, it was Draymond, it was Clay, KD comes over. But as an org, they rode that wave.
Right.
And when Steph retires, I mean, the Golden State Warriors were not in an awesome place before this dynasty as an org. And I think when Steph hangs it up, like the Chase Center, the coaching staff, the front office's vision, and then just this sort of Patriots Spurs-esque kind of, you walk into the building, you know what the culture is, you know what's expected of them. Golden State rode this wave of talent into an evolution as an organization.
Right.
And it's something few orgs do. And it's sort of why I've been so bummed with the latest developments in Denver.
But Eric, part of this is, remember the Nuggets were the next Warriors, right? 4 years ago, The articles were coming out like, hey man, we see a lot of similarities. And maybe they are, maybe they are. But one thing I will say is, when you talk about the buy-in from every level of this, you've got Joe Lacob, who really is, I hate to say it, trust me, it brings me no joy to say this, light years ahead of his competition. He really does sink an absurd amount of money. I mean, one of the things that makes the Warriors is they have this tax bill that's like absolutely ridiculous. They're just like, we don't care. This is what we do. Then you have it from management, ownership to management to coaching staff to players. It's not that they get along 24/7. It's not that they don't have disagreements, but they're moving in the same direction. They all work and there's that continuity there. So to me, that's like, I want the Nuggets to be the next Warriors. I just, there are big reasons why I'm worried they are not.
Well, I will say that Andrew Wiggins is Aaron Gordon. It's the same thing.
Sure.
A guy that was supposed to be the leader of a team.
Yep.
Minnesota wasn't ready to lead, looked foolish at times for it, was then written off and then found a home where he was not looked at as the guy that was meant to lead the squad. Like, he has a purpose, and like, to come in and be the guy that can get hot when Clay is not hot, when Steph is not hot, when Jordan Poole is not hot, then you have Andrew Wiggins. I mean, this team is just like wave after wave after wave of guys that can beat you if they just get hot, which is pretty remarkable. And honestly, like, is sort of like, in my mind, kind of breaks basketball. It's just like, if you just get a bunch of talented guys that, and as you're talking about, play together in a way that is complementary and understand that they right. are. And a lot of this came organically over time. I mean, you know, they were not good. They were not good. Suddenly they played the Nuggets in the playoffs. They destroyed them. They ruined my hopes, ruined my dreams. And then from that point on, like, they've sort of understood that core of players, Draymond, Clay, and Steph, are so bulletproof that, like, anything right. else that happens around them, people don't have to come in and worry about the culture. It's exactly right. like it was with the Spurs. When you have that
yep.
strong foundation, you don't come in, Patriots, same thing, like you just guys just said. Like, you don't come in, you're like, oh, okay, how am I going to make my name for myself on this team? It's like, no, how am I going to be a piece of the machine that
right.
is this right. team? How am I going to fit into them, as opposed to how am I going to make my own mark here? And so the Nuggets are like not that far off. I mean, this is like my one talking point all fucking year long, is that the Warriors did not make the playoffs last year. They did not make the playoffs the year before. In fact, they were horrible the year before. And the only major difference is that they didn't have Klay Thompson. And something about like
also with Clay, with Draymond and with Steph, like, if,
yes, but yeah. yes. But I mean, like, that was the major, major difference. So, but yes, health, continuity, getting those three pieces in place where sort of everything else falls by the wayside. Like, you're going to get good from some players sometimes, not other times, but like other teams, like the Mavericks, like, rely on Reggie Bullock. Like, and he scores 0 points last game, and they lose. That's it. Like, if you relied on Jordan Poole in the same way that they rely on Reggie Bullock, and he has a bad game, you lose. But like, the Warriors are like, all right, whatever. Like, Andrew, this is your game. Like, you step up. Every game's going to be a Clay game. Every game's going to be a Steph game. Draymond's going to do what he does. It's just like, they're a goddamn machine.
But you mentioned like Poole and Wiggins and Kuminga and all these guys. It's so easy to overestimate how those guys get to that point. Like, it's really hard. If that was the way, like, every team would get it. And when you said that Andrew Wiggins is Aaron Gordon, yes and no. He's some combination of Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter in this one regard. Like, for one, he had a 5-year max that he was starting that everyone's yep. like the worst contract in the NBA. Now, if the Warriors this offseason had called anybody and said, here's Andrew Wiggins, they'd be like, sweet, are you serious? He's available?
Yeah.
So this is part of it. And you hope the same thing can happen with Michael Porter. Like, to me, Aaron Gordon, to my surprise, I credit the Nuggets culture a little bit. I mean, really a lot. But I also credit Aaron Gordon. I think he sure. wanted to win. I think he just wanted to make that decision. Michael Porter, to me, is the next one up. Like, he right now is almost as much the Andrew Wiggins as anyone. Is it's like, could he be a great player in a different way? Yes, but they need him to be a great player in a very specific way, which is, in my opinion, no less great, just different. And we haven't had an opportunity to see if he'll become that. His opportunity was cut short. Harrison, what do you think? Go ahead.
I think the bigger point is Andrew Wiggins, like, totally remade himself as a player in some ways this season in Golden State. And there are only a couple of teams, I feel like, where he would have done that.
Right.
This obviously wasn't happening in any of his previous stops, but it took a special circumstance in Golden State to bring it out of him. And, I mean, he's upped his rebounding in the playoffs. His shot attempts are down. He's making the little plays, making the hustle plays. And I think it has a lot to do with the Golden State culture. And it also has a lot to do with who the personnel that the Warriors have is and who the leaders of that team are. And they have a guy in Draymond Green who can go over to Andrew Wiggins and say, if you play like you did in Minnesota, we're going to sit your ass down on the bench and you're not going to play. If you want to play here and be a role player and contribute to winning and be the piece that we need to win a championship, you're going to rebound and play defense and make open shots and let me, Steph, and Clay do the heavy lifting on the offensive end. And that's what the Nuggets are missing. They don't. They need that guy to be able to look Will Barton in the eye, to be able to look Aaron Gordon in the eye, to look Michael Porter Jr. in the eye and tell them, like, this is how you need to play for us to be successful. And that guy probably has to be Jamal Murray, you know, to develop into that type of leader. I don't think he can really be anybody else. But that's the other element here. Like, Draymond Green has just enough enough control over that organization. He's built up enough rep as a player and as a leader to be able to put everybody in line. And it's another reason why Andrew Wiggins is good all of a sudden.
Right. I also get the sense that some of the Nuggets had this takeaway from playing the Warriors, this version of the Warriors.
I love this.
Malone, Jokic quote we referenced earlier, the Malone presser, which had a different tone and sense of urgency to it. I think everyone just sort of understanding that that business-like approach. I saw someone put in the chat, KD was talking about this on JJ's pod, that those Warriors title years, it was everyone from the owner down to the ball boy seemed to get it. Like, this year is about something bigger than me and about us as a group and moving towards this collective goal. So I will also say this. Harrison, I don't know if you remember, one of my big takeaways being in the building post-Aaron Gordon trade before the injuries, I felt like there was a real air of seriousness to, like, they were, the way those guys were walking onto the court to start the game, the high fives before the game, there was just a level of focus that almost came before the "we're also going to enjoy this." And it was really exciting to see. And so it's just something you hope that this is the evolution, right? For not just any one player, but the Denver Nuggets going forward.
Yeah. But the Warriors weren't always this. Like,
for sure.
When they have had to grow into this. This is like, the Nuggets can be the Warriors. They're just at the beginning stages of it. Like, they just need that spark where it all of a sudden clicks for them. The year before they went on just their holy fire from hell tour that
2014.
They've been on basically ever since. Yes, they were not that. They like that was the, you know, everybody.
I think the Nuggets references were the 2014 Warriors.
Yeah, I think so too.
The Jamal Murray injury. It was like, okay, yes, they're right on the precipice. Right.
Except for that, except for that, like those Warriors were the sixth seed as when they came in, and they really still hadn't figured it out until that was the first time that we really saw Steph Curry catch fire in a way where he was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I'm going to shoot with reckless abandon and they're going to go in a lot. And not only is it going to give us 3 points as opposed to 2 points, it's going to demoralize the other squad. I mean, I've never felt more demoralized than when Steph Curry would just start to do things that I'd never seen another player nothing do like outside it. Of J.R. Like Smith. It. Right. Dude, it was crazy.
You know, you're like, all right, well, F us. Yo, I know it's different because threes are splashier and make the crowd lighter, but like Jokic hitting his BS 7-footers that he just hits every time, like, has the same effect. Like, you hop into like another team's Twitter or Reddit or whatever, like after a game, and you're like, how the hell does Jokic hit 7 straight floaters? Like, well, it's because what he does. I don't know. It's his shot. Like, he's going to hit those in the next game too. Again, I don't want to credit anyone. My whole point of bringing them up is I could sit here and tell you the Warriors' success is because of Steph Curry, not his play. I'm talking about the culture is because of Steph Curry and his play. I could tell you it's because of Draymond. I think it's both. I could tell you it's because of Kerr. I think it is because of Kerr, too. I think because of Bob Myers and his management, because Joe Lacob. There is a cohesiveness in that entire organization, and I just don't think, unless you see behind the curtain, I don't think you know how rare that is. It's extremely rare. It's more common to have a divisiveness in a single front office, meaning like you have factions of a front office that are like having a cold war with each other and playing the media, have different sources that they are people that they talk to and leak information. And the Warriors just seem to have none of that. They all move in the same direction. And here we are 8 years into their championship window and still humming along and going strong. And it's just so impressive. And I agree, Eric. The Nuggets are very close. And I think Jokic, this is the point he is saying. I don't have to close my eyes. I see it. We have the talent. We just have to work together. Because if you don't have the talent, you're just the 2014 Hawks.
Right.
Like,
right.
You're really good, but it's like, come on, nobody takes you seriously. That's not the Nuggets. They have Jokic to start. Nope. Right. They also have Jamal Murray and Michael Porter and Aaron Gore. They have the talent.
It's the question is, can we get on the same page? Because they have never been on the same page to the degree the Warriors are, but they've also haven't had a great chance, a great opportunity. But that's the task in front of them. And I just thought it was so interesting because the Warriors to me are the best story in basketball. And I do see a chance for the Nuggets to be just like them starting next year. Let's take a break. On the other side, we'll get into some of these prospects, starting with Tari Eason.
Breckenridge Brewery, the official beer of DNVR. They are doing something for the Avs playoff run where they're pretty much giving you a free beer. Because when the Avs score two goals in the first period, which has been happening, you get a free beer. You get a free Avalanche Amber Ale. On game day, start your Avs game with an Avalanche Amber Ale at any bar or restaurant. Make sure you save your receipt, though, if the Avs score two or more goals in the first period. Breck Brew, the official beer of DNVR, will pay for your beer. Just upload your receipt on breckbrew.com. They send you a rebate, as easy as that. So check out Breck Brew, the official beer of DNVR. And during the Avs playoff run, make sure you're drinking Avalanche Amber Ale. At DraftKings Sportsbook, the NBA playoff action. It's nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win. Get $150 in free bets if they do. If you're looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the NBA playoffs, check out DraftKings Same Game Parlays. Right now, all customers, not just new customers, all customers can place a same game parlay with three or more legs and get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. Make sure to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Promo code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
All right, here, back segment two. We're going to start talking about Tari Eason as our first player that we're going to highlight. We're going to get into, I don't know, maybe 20 different guys. Look at these beautiful graphics. Work left side, fully formed. Right side, still in progress. But look at how gorgeous this is. Eric, you want to walk us through this beautiful basketball card?
Yeah, first off, this is a basketball card. Thank you. Not a baseball card. I put his name on there. I also selected a photo of him and then where he went to school and that he's a
forward. I regret throwing to you for this segment. really cool. Let's get into it. We're going to do a couple. We want to have sort of a cohesive way of going about these. So I have some notes. I took Tari Eason. Wind wrote about Tari, by the way, last week. You can go check that out as well. We also use some great resources. I want to give a shout out to Adam Spinella, who's been on the show, friend of the show, Adam Spinella, who does a great job getting into all these making videos for all the top prospects that I highly recommend people go and check out. So here's Tari Eason. He's 21 years old, played at LSU. He actually played, I believe, at Cincinnati for a season win. Maybe you can help me with this. And then transferred to LSU, I believe. And then had a season here. Just to start off, I want to start with physical traits here. Yeah, that's too choppy, Kale. It doesn't look like it's going to work, sadly, appropriately enough. But 6'8", 220. Good wingspan. Here's the thing, physically, and I don't want you to get lost because it's a very different player. Physically, he has the profile of a Wilson Chandler. Like if you were just looking at like what does he look like on the court, like size wise, I think it's Wilson Chandler. And then he has this crazy 7'2" wingspan that's absolutely insane, and it serves him very well on the defensive end. So if you picture Wilson Chandler and then like stylistic comps, man, these are hard to come by. The comp I have when I'm watching him, Harrison, this might actually be before all you guys. Kind of reminds me of Leon Poe. Do you guys remember the Leon Poe era in Boston at all?
I did not get that impression at all. But
I mean, I could be way off on these. There's in fact, it might be right. But the reason I say that is that he's kind of raw, but he's kind of like Torrey Craig-esque almost, and like he produces. His numbers are really good. You look at that 17 points per game, 6.5 rebounds per game. The counting stats defensively, 1.9 steals per game, 1.1 blocks is like really wild. Those are really good, especially for the minute. I think he played around 25 minutes per game. So he produces. Like he produces, but it's a little clunky and it's a little bit ugly. The first thing I'll say about his measurables, you might like this one, male form corner. Elite measurables, he's got really low hips. Huh. Like when you watch him play, Well, it's like the opposite of Bol Bol, right? Whose hips were like so high up. Like his hips
do not lie.
Yeah, he has like low hips, and I think it gives him a lower center of gravity, like really good balance. When you, the thing about him is he's 6'8", but he kind of moves like a guard defensively. He's just very reacts really, really well. Slides left to right, guards the perimeter really well, extremely long, and it just makes him so disruptive because he's got those long arms, long contests, and on the perimeter, I just feel like he's going to be able to guard, you know, a lot of positions. But yeah, but low hip, like when you watch him, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. He looks like a long torso guy. I love
this. Is like when a baby is born and you don't talk about its height, you talk about its length or the amount of months it's been alive. When you talk about low hips, what you're really talking about is short legs. He has short legs, but I love that you framed it as low hips.
When he shows you their baby, you're like, I don't know, man.
You're like, well, no, you're like, how long is that baby? Like, we're talking about height, right? The man has short legs, but I'm interested.
He doesn't have short legs. I mean, this is the thing. Like, you make it sound. This is my thing about basketball in general, is that you're talking about very abnormally shaped people to begin with. They almost all have something weird about their physical traits. This is his, like, and it serves him. Again, the reason I bring it up is because he's really mobile on the perimeter, especially defensively. Go ahead.
Oh, just quickly. I'm sorry. I'll derail this, but I'm just in my time watching basketball as a moron and just a guy, an observer of life and things outside of what other people watch basketball with. I've noticed long arms, almost the most important thing in basketball. Long arms, big hands. With the one exception of Desmond Bain. Desmond Bain is the one guy that breaks this. He has the shortest arms in the NBA. Somehow he's dominant. Everybody else with long arms is somehow awesome.
Well, I'm glad you bring up that point, D-Line, because you know who measured the widest hands at the NBA Combine just this last week? It was Tari Eason. 11-inch wide hands.
Does this count as addressing a weakness for the Nuggets?
Maybe
hand he size? Had the third just longest hands, sized and hands, the widest hands.
At all right,
the
I'm updating my physical comp again. This is not stylistic comp. I'm updating it to Kawhi Leonard. And actually, one of the reasons he is like physically, he really is.
Let's go.
If you want to know something actually kind of funny, Kawhi Leonard also kind of low hips.
Oh, short legs.
Yeah. My take on Tari Eason is the reason I looked into him is because last week I wrote about three prospects who could maybe in some way be this year's version of Herb Jones, which like that's the guy the Nuggets are trying to find this year.
Hold up. That's every year there's a new, are we going to find the next whatever? And this year it's Herb Jones. Like he was so good late in the pit. Yeah. This year. Next
we're not going to. Just there'll be a new the guy, well, though. You're right.
All I'm saying is the Nuggets are going to look to find somebody who is a high upside defender, is long, whose probably best position is the three. If they had it their way, like a three or like a big two. A guy who can play really good defense and a guy that hopefully can contribute sooner rather than later. I think that's the mold of a best case scenario draft prospect for Denver. Yeah. And I mean, Tari Eason, he's not Herb Jones because what people forget about Herb Jones is he was a 4-year player in college. He was, you know, somewhat polished for a guy coming out. Like he played in a ton of big games. He played, you know, a ton of basketball in the SEC. Eason is a lot more raw, but if you look at some of their numbers, like Herb Jones and Tari Eason, I think there's definitely a comparison to be made there. I mean, Herb Jones last year, one of the big stats about him was he was the only player in a high major conference to record a block percentage over 4%, a steal percentage over 3%, and an assist percentage over 20% during his senior year. Herb Jones is a good passer. Tari Eason is not that type of passer. He only averaged like 2 assists per 40 minutes this season, but he had a 6.2 block percentage and a 4.5 steal percentage. Like both those are, you know, well above what Herb Jones did his senior year. So like the defensive production from Tari Eason is absolutely there. And you look at him, I think, as a guy who could like be a very high upside defensive player, both on the ball and off the ball too.
He also has my favorite trait when we're talking about basketball players, when they can't shoot. Every year we're like, oh, he's great at basketball. The only thing he's not good at is shooting and dribbling. And you're like,
well,
okay.
Both of those things definitely high on the list here. Real quick, so some more background on him. He won a state title, high school state title in Washington, beating out who? Paolo Banchero. He put up 21 and 14 points against Paolo in the championship game. Allegedly outplayed him en route to a state title, which is not a big deal, but it's something to take note of. Like, I'm always interested in those things. Super athletic. I mean, he is a guy that has, like, again, those big hands. He dunks a lot. He gets to the rim. He's a great, like, get to the rim finish guy. I mean, that's kind of part of what it is. This is when I talk later on about him being raw. There's players that are raw but don't produce. Big red flag. When you're raw but you do produce, like, you still score even though you don't have, like, very polished skill set.
You're a hooper.
I think you could be very intrigued.
And he's an aggressive guy. I mean, he got to the line a lot. That's how he scored a lot. He's also a guy that could help the Nuggets in transition, where they are woeful on both ends. They just for whatever reason. And he's a guy who I think on both ends in that regard can help a lot. Look, the baseline thing with Tari, like, before you get into sort of nitpicking at some of these other details, you go, he is a wing. Like, he fits. He is properly sized. He is a body type Denver is missing. He's a guy that you'd think could be a part of multiple defensive lineups because he has some versatility. So it's just one of the body types, one of the archetypes Denver is lacking.
I do wonder if he's a little bit more of a 3.5 and maybe even a 4 than he is a 3, but we'll talk about that here in a second. Okay. He was 5th in college in defensive box plus minus, plays with a great motor. And again, effective. We'll go now. You can pull up the strengths and weakness there, Kale, and I'll just kind of go through them. This is from my perspective. One-on-one defense, but also his help side defense is very strong. Like, I think he's going to be a good defensive player. To me, his route to being a great NBA player is through being a great defensive player, and then the offense, you know, fitting into with a system that he is placed into. But one-on-one defense, I just think he shows a lot of promise. Athleticism, I combine athleticism and body. Like, he just has a great NBA body, just a great NBA body that I think will fit him, including those low hips. And then his motor. I mean, this is why I wanted to be careful with the Wilson Chandler comp, because while physically he might have some of the same measurables as a Wilson Chandler, he plays a lot more with the energy of a Jared Vanderbilt or somebody, you know, like that, where he's always going hard. It's ugly at times, but he's always playing hard. And when you have the talent portion of your roster down, sometimes you just need a guy that plays hard and crashes into people and draws fouls. Weaknesses on the other side. Yeah, his shot's pretty ugly. As most of his game is pretty ugly. Like, a lot of his scoop shots around the rim and stuff just are like, look like absolute garbage. But again, the production is what matters.
Did they go in?
Not so much. His shots around the rim actually do go in a lot. I mean, some of this is that he dunks a lot, but some of it is also just that he's a head down rhinoceros. Handle uses his the worst part about him to me, maybe the most concerning part. There's parts of people's game, like, some guys work on their shot, they just don't have good touch. Handle to me is the one where I'm like, you can kind of see what, like, where you are in development. He is maybe the most right hand dominant prospect I've ever seen. That guy makes moves to the left, like going right to left with his right hand, like just almost Stanley from The Office esque in the way he would cross his body. So those things to me, when we say raw, there's raw as in you have to work on like pick and roll reads and this, that. And then there's raw that's like, when you go left, you should use your left hand.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to be a little concerning from a Nuggets perspective, because I really do think, like, they're not trying to take a project here. They're not trying to take an RJ Hampton, I don't think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Calvin Booth is even, you know, more of a draft dude than Tim Conley is. Like, maybe Calvin Booth is just really looking
no to chance.
Hit a home run with this long-term prospect. I don't think that's the case, but I just think they're going to want somebody who they feel comfortable throwing out there game one.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess what I mean by, you know, about being a wing, like, I understand he is a little more of a power forward in terms of how he's been used. I just mean, he's a body type that can guard 3-4 and get down to some twos probably even as well. Not, you know, we'll see how big the range is at the next level, but just a guy who can guard those 6'7", 6'8" dudes and be versatile. Denver just has very few of those guys.
Yeah. We'll go in quickly to wrap up this segment here. What position would he play in Denver? What's interesting about this, obviously, I think he's more of a prospect guy. Like, you know, he would probably follow like a 2 or 3 year trajectory to getting real minutes. I don't think he's a guy like Bones that's going to come in and play as much, although you never know. We'll see how the roster shakes out. But I think he is more like a Jeff Green, meaning to me, when I watch him play, I'm worried he might be best at power forward or at small forward alongside Michael Porter, you know, as the two forwards. Okay. I don't know that it's going to be like you're going to go with him and AG and have a functional offense defense. Type. So that's one thing. Harrison,
I just want to bring up one thing from the chat. KD goat. Great comment. Just absolutely perfect.
Man, it's so true. Flows with
true. Super relevant. Hey, he's the
triple goat.
What do you think Tari might go in the draft?
We'll get there at the end. Vote. Oh. We'll get there at the end. You're jumping my show prep. Important. We have a little format here. We're going to do a problem.
Sometimes Harrison, on audible and flow.
Harrison, positionally, what do you see him as at the next level?
I see him as a 3-4, but and maybe like yeah. It's going to be tough because probably how much he can handle the ball is going to determine if he can play the three. But I think it could be a 3, you know, 3-4 shuffle between those two positions. But the thing you like about him is he can guard probably, you know, 1 through 5 maybe in some lineups. Like he is a prototypical switch guy on defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really exciting about him.
I like the Kuminga comp. The one thing I'll say about Kuminga, I don't know how they compare athletically. Kuminga is one of the best athletes I've ever seen. Like some of his dunks are so absurd. I'm like, holy hell. I think Eason is a really good athlete and he has that long wingspan, but he might be as good of an athlete. Kuminga really blows me away. When we go, all right, how does he fit with Jokic? So he's a long boy. That really matters. And he's an athlete. Like, we just haven't given Jokic a ton of athletes. And I'm very curious if you did play him alongside, just again, in theory, these lineups probably won't ever happen. But if you did play him with Jamal, let's say Austin Rivers, and then him and Michael Porter next to Jokic, I would look at that and I'd go, defenses would have a hell of a time matching up with him and Michael Porter. They're both huge. They both have physical, you know, like traits that make them hard to match up with. And you'd probably end up having to go bigger than you're comfortable with just to physically match up with both guys. And I love that. Like, we haven't seen an athlete of that caliber alongside Jokic with those measurables outside of AG.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he is like, remember a couple of years ago when, you know, the Nuggets, they were the long boys. They had all these longer, rangier guys. You know, the height of the Jeremy Grant era is when this really happened. But they just went in the total opposite direction, it felt like, a little bit. PJ Dozier was a part of that era as well.
Right.
But Tari Eason is definitely a long boy. Definitely a long boy.
Yeah. Draft superlative, I would give him the most disruptive defender. I don't know if he's the best, but he just gets a lot of steals, a lot of blocks, a lot of hands on the ball because he's, again, just has such a high motor and he has such weird measurables. And then lastly, will he be available at 21? I've seen a lot of people in the chat here. Probably not. We don't know. There's guys that rise or fall. One of the reasons we're going to cover everybody from like 10 to 30 or whatever is because Michael Porter, famously, we did not scout him when the Nuggets had that pick. And then we ended up being like, oh, crap, we didn't even ever talk about him. So Tari, I don't think he's going to go like top 10 or anything like that. But most mocks do have him going comfortably ahead of Denver, 15, 14, 16, somewhere in that range. So he would be a draft day fall guy. All right, real quick, thumbs up or thumbs down on Tari Eason. What do you think, Bo?
I mean, my big concern would be drafting, like if he's more of a Jeff Green type, like they have enough power forwards, but can he be more of a big three, you know, an AG-esque kind of wing forward kind of deal with that defensive versatility and that size? So, I mean, I don't know what position he plays. Don't love the idea that he kind of looks like Torrey Craig when he's dribbling, but
totally
I love the idea of a versatile defender. So,
yeah.
I think I'm mostly into it.
Eric, are you into it?
I mean, I'm just going off what you guys have said. I've not watched any footage of this guy except for the right. three shaky seconds. But I love the idea of having a big wing defender. That's absolutely something the Denver Nuggets need. I'd love, especially if we can have Jamal and MPJ coming back to provide the shooting that we are so sorely missing alongside Jokic. And then just like a lockdown defender, like that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So. I gotta see him. I can't.
He is like Torrey Craig, man. Like he both gets fouled a ton and fouls a ton. It's like it's perfect. He's a chaos player. It's kind of fun. Harrison,
yeah, that was another thing about Torrey Eason. He averaged 9.3 free throw attempts per 40 minutes.
It's a ton.
Like that's an insane amount. And he shot 80% from the free throw line in college. That bodes really well for his 3-point shooting going forward. Like 9.3 free throw attempts. The leader in college last year, Scottie Pippen Jr., shot 10.1 free throw attempts per 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So the guy drew foul after foul after foul after foul, and I think that is just kind of his mentality. He's just going to go to the rim and attack the rim and use his athleticism and use his length. And just having that, you know, that diving presence going to the rim, I think is something this team could definitely use. I like Torrey Eason. Thumbs up for sure.
I'm thumbs up as well. He's not my typical type of prospect. There could be a bit of Jaden Springer-ness to this where we're all like picturing the best fill a need guy, not necessarily the best player. And like, we're like, man, if it works out the way he's supposed to, it's the perfect fix. So there might be a little bit of that, but I'm into him. And I do think that foul drawing is really intriguing, especially when you talk about he'll be attacking an empty paint all the time with Yo dragging bigs out. So very intrigued. I like him. I don't think he'll be available at 21. I don't think the Nuggets will move up cool. to get him. But sweet. He might be a guy that draft night. Hey, draft night, supposed to go 16. Oh, they passed on him. Okay, guy fallen. That might be a guy that you kind of take a look at. So we'll cross that bridge when it comes. All right, let's take a break on the other side. We'll get into an even more interesting and certainly more likely pick for the Nuggets, Jalen Williams.
Definitely, definitely. Ivaka TV, if you have not been able to watch Nuggets and Avs games this season, or Rapids games, maybe you're into the Rapids, check out Ivaka TV. What you need to do to get Ivaka TV, which has Altitude Sports, which has AT&T Sportsnet, so you can watch the Rockies this summer, which has other national channels as well, go to ivaka.tv/DNVR. Type in the promo code DNVR. When you sign up, you're going to get $10 off your first 3 months. That's only $15 per month the first 3 months, plus a receiver, no contracts, no hidden fees. You have the option to rent a receiver for $5 a month or purchase a receiver up front for $250 if you want. But those first 3 months, $15 a month, you get a free receiver as well. Again, Ivaka.tv/DNVR. Ivaka TV, they're taking over the world. It's a totally new paradigm for TV. You get Altitude, you get other national channels, $15 a month for the first 3 months with promo code DNVR. Also at Lightshade Dispensary right now, they've got a ton of locations across Denver. You guys can pick up some Wana Optimals Fast Asleep Gummies. If you need to catch up on some shut-eye after the big game, check out Wana. Over-the-counter pharmaceuticals, they knock you out with powerful drugs that leave you in a fog, but Wana Optimals Fast Asleep Gummies offer a holistic plant-based solution that tackles the root causes of sleepiness like stress and pain. It's a fast-acting sleep aid that will have your eyelids feeling heavy in just 5 to 15 minutes. Where can you find Wana? Colorado's premier dispensary, Lightshade, with 11 convenient Denver Metro and Aurora locations. The Barnum location, one block off 6th and Federal, now open as well. You guys, if you give them the promo code DNVR, you're going to get 25% off non-sale items. Shop online at lightshade.com or pick up at a Lightshade location near you.
All right, Wynn. Next up, Jalen Williams. I see some people saying he's going to go in the lottery. Maybe. Every year there's one guy that like flies 30 spots ahead of where they were in like March. And that's Jalen Jalen Williams right now. Like he was a second rounder 2 weeks ago. He's had a great I think as people start to get into more of it, he's kind of flying up. And then of course he had a great week at the combine earlier, just this last week. So he might actually not be available there. Although I think most mocks still have him in the 20s. Harrison, give us the scouting report.
So Jalen Williams, he's a 21-year-old junior out of Santa Clara. He's a forward, 6'6", with a 7'2" wingspan.
Insane!
Same wingspan.
His measurables. Yeah, his measurables are off the charts. And this is one of the reasons why he's just really climbing draft boards at the combine, other than the fact that he can really play. His measurables are crazy. He, I think, recorded a 39-inch max vertical, and his max vertical reach was 12 feet, half an inch. That's higher than Aaron Gordon jumped at the combine. That's higher than Rudy Gobert jumped at the combine.
It's insane.
He also finished in the 90th percentile or better in his three-quarter court sprint and his standing vertical. He's just got this combination of speed, vertical jump, and length that, like, anybody's just going to drool over. Like, and his measurables are just insane.
And then he knows how to play the game, which I know you're going to get to, but he's not just a measurable darling. I mean,
right. Yeah. You said a vote. Like, the number one bullet point on the Jalen Williams scouting report is just elite feel for the game.
Yeah.
You watch this guy play, and your biggest impression is, wow, he knows how to play. Like, you throw him into a game, and this was even the case in these 5-on-5 scrimmages at the combine. You throw him in there, he holds his own. He looks like a good player in really any type of basketball environment. He feels like he knows his strengths and weaknesses. He's got like a lot of confidence and comfort and patience with his game. Super high IQ, really good passer, makes NBA types of passes, like one-handed over the head passes, skip passes, can play make out of the pick and roll, scoring, passing. And then he was a 40% shooter from three last year, 81% free throw shooter. He is confident in his shot, knows how to set the defense up, coming around screens. He just understands the game. And the final thing, final like big bullet point on Jalen Williams, the measurables are so interesting because he's this unbelievable athlete, but he's kind of a little slow-mo when you watch his tape. Like, when he gets to the rim, he can jam on people. Like, he can fly down the paint, but he's sometimes a little of a below-the-rim finisher. He has this like slow-mo old man's game to him. So the athleticism doesn't always pop, but like when it does, it's obvious.
So yeah, his measurables are like really intriguing. To be honest, I watched him. That was like the last piece I got from him because I was just watching some of the tape, some of the like the scouting videos on him. He's smooth. I love his feel for the game. He has a very advanced pick and roll like timing. He's not always just going 100 miles per hour or like very deliberate. He just reads the court really, really well. He's got good touch. I love his game. He's a total, like, you know, my type of guy. He almost reminds me of Kyle Anderson in some of his like movements. Like, he looks a little slow and this or that, even though at the combine he tested really well in like shuttle drills and stuff. He doesn't play fast. So you look at all those things and you think, like, my worry with him was like, does he have the NBA level athleticism? But then when you see he does have it, he just picks his spots of where to use it. To me, I see why he is flying up draft boards. It should be noted, he had a couple underwhelming seasons and then he's had one great one. So he's kind of like a late bloomer where it's like really come on. And that's always interesting, especially when you talk about playing in a small mid-major Santa Clara and not sticking out early on in your career, then all of a sudden it should be noted. I don't know if it's that important, but it should be noted.
So, like, initially mocked at 21, definitely going to be picked at 11 type of guy. That's what it sounds like to me.
Maybe.
I mean, he has a lot of momentum going right now. Yeah, we've seen these types of guys all the time.
Zaire last year.
Yeah. And so you just don't know if he's going to be that guy and shoot up the draft boards. He was actually, I think, initially like even further back, a second round type guy, and he's really starting to climb. Eric, all right. Oh, wait, do you want to get into strengths and weaknesses, Harrison?
Well, I was going to talk about how he kind of came out of nowhere because this was really like his first like standout year in college. He averaged 18 a game this year, 4.5 rebounds, 4.2 assists, led his team in both scoring and assists. Santa Clara. His freshman year played 25.5 minutes a game, 7 points, you know, started some of the year, came off the bench some of the year. And then his sophomore season wasn't really good. Reading more into it, like, his field goal percentage declined his sophomore year. It seems like it had a lot to do with COVID. Apparently Santa Clara was forced to play in like a different county from where they usually play at. so at the Warriors G League arena due to the COVID rules in Santa Clara. So this meant the team had to live out of a hotel and like split court time with three other teams, the women's basketball team and the Stanford men's and women's basketball team. They only had like 2 hours of practice a day.
He'd fit in so well at the Nuggets practice facility with compromised facilities. So perfect, man.
It seems like there's some reason for the not great sophomore season.
Awesome. The defense, you want to talk about the defense here? Because he's much more of an offensive prospect to me. He's got a good set shot. And I know the numbers on it aren't great, but I look at it and I go, man, that's a smooth looking, great balance, great release. Numbers on it were decent. Yeah.
His defense is definitely behind his offense, but a couple things stood out about the defense. Like, first of all, his wingspan. His 7'2" wingspan is just going to really help anybody out. This is what we talk about with Bones and how we all think he's going to be a good defender long term, because he's just so long that he can get steals and get deflections that other guys just can't. I think his IQ is going to really help him on defense as well. He just kind of knows where to be. A bunch of his highlights on defense are him like coming over from the weak side to double team somebody in the post when they don't know that guy's coming, or just intercepting a skip pass. Like, he can read the game pretty well. And then also he's got strong hands. He just like rips the ball free of some guys as well. So his defense is definitely behind his offense, but I definitely trust that he can be an above average defender just because of his size and his IQ and feel.
I think he kind of reminds me of Bones on defense in that he's not known as a defender. He has the tools to be there, and there's reason to think he could grow into it, but it's not like he's a natural defender. Like, oh, that's who he is. He's a lockdown defensive guy. My thought on it is, if you just, again, hypothetical lineup combinations here, if we just said you have Jamal Murray, Bones Highland, Jalen Williams, Michael Porter, Jokic, good luck stopping it, because Jalen is a guy that could become a third ball handler. Like, he looks comfortable. He runs pick and roll with Jokic. It's going to be great. And then you have all that spacing out there. It's going to absolutely murder. Defensively, probably not a championship defensive lineup right there. That's probably one. If you swap out Michael Porter and Aaron Gordon, another lineup that works. You still have three great three-point shooters plus Jokic spacing the court. All that continuity still works. Your defense goes up a level. So he's really intriguing to me, but he is more of the Bones Highland-esque pick, where if you were thinking the Nuggets need to find their Herb Jones in this draft, he's not that. But he is a really, really good player that I'm, like, super intrigued by.
Yeah, fit's funny because, I mean, need and fit can be two different things, right? Like, could you see a slower-paced, high IQ, you know, secondary to tertiary playmaking three playing with Jokic? Yeah, of course.
Rushing.
of course. But I do think the biggest need – if we're going to operate under the pretense that wind – you know, outlined that they are looking for that Herb Jones guy. Like, this isn't it, right? I think that's what we said.
And it does. It's not it in terms of a defensive guy, but it's definitely it in terms of a guy who can maybe give you some two-way play from day one.
Sure. Right. Okay. All
right. Yeah. Eric.
I mean, I'm intrigued. I don't know. To me, a big defender is what the Denver Nuggets should go after, right? We've heard this said many times. If this guy is elite defensively, like, I'm interested. If he's not, I'm not interested. Like,
really? That simple?
Yeah, that's kind of it. Like, the Nuggets are in a place, I don't know, the Nuggets are kind of in a place where they should draft for need. They kind of should draft for need. I mean, that's always sort of a bugaboo when it comes to drafting, but like, they have their core in place. Like, now this is, and it really, like, I mean, we're worried about Michael Porter. Michael Porter Jr. is the one piece that I'm like the most nervous about coming back into play and actually being able to be useful like he was previously. But if he's able to, then truly perimeter defense and the ability to help not only keep people out of the middle, but then also help once they get into the middle is really all the Nuggets need.
Who was a championship caliber defender in last year's draft? I think there was Herb Jones, Davion Mitchell. Were there any other guys that you thought, like, if you plugged them into a championship team, they would fill the role of defensive guy? Zaire, like, maybe a little. I mean, I don't know. Like, he was.
Who was drafted last year? What are the teams again?
Bones Highland.
Yeah, this is my point. Is I'm very bearish on the idea that the Nuggets are going to draft a impact defender as a rookie. Mm-hmm. I just think that's such a tall task.
it might happen. And if that guy's available, a la Herb Jones, you might move that guy up 10 spots because he fills the need for you from 31 to 21. But if it's not, I don't know that Denver has to say we're only going, oh, Mobley, yeah, it's a good call. Although even Mobley, to be honest with you, like, as good as he is, it still takes players that are going to be rim protectors several years to get to that point. Grimes, we just didn't see it enough, but maybe. So there's just, my point is, you're talking about a very small list of players, and I don't think Denver can say we have to take an entire draft and whittle it down to the four guys, half of whom are going to be.
I mean, like, how would you approach this draft philosophically? Are you just best player available at all costs?
I think you have to be in the draft. I think you have to be. And here's the thing. If you get, so let's say you get a guy like a Jalen Williams, and he comes in and he looks just like Bones, only he's taller. The thing about Jalen is he's more of a three. Like, he could be at the three, the 2-3 combo, like a combo guard because of that length. So if you have that, you might look at Bones now as more expendable next year or something like that, because we get the same production offensively. He runs the pick and roll. He shoots. He does all this or that.
Hey, he watches this show, dude.
I'm not trying to trade Bones. I'm just saying, like,
you draft players
that can play, and then you can make your pick. So Jose Alvarado, there you go. Although that's a little bit of a unique one, not exactly a draft pick. All right, let's get into it. Let's wrap this up, Harrison. What position is he?
I think he's a three, but he's also like a point forward.
Yeah.
You know, like, he can initiate offense. I think he's got some point guard gene in him too, where it's not like he's bringing the ball up the floor every play, but, you know, he can run pick and roll. He can, like, dribble. He can handle it. He can run pick and roll, like I said. So I think he'll probably settle in as a three, but he's versatile because of his size, and he can just do a little bit of everything on the offensive end.
If you run a pick and roll with him and Yoke, and you have Michael Porter, Bones, and Murray spacing, it's like, come on, man. Nobody's stopping that. And he's so big that the guy guarding him is likely going to have to be big to keep up with him. I offensively, I love it. I love these types of players. They're my types of guys.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like a really big guard to me in a lot of ways. You know, I know it's not the entirety of his game, but he certainly has that element to it.
All right, next one.
Will he be available at 21? Originally, he was a second round pick, like we were talking about earlier, but he's risen into the first round, even getting a little bit of lottery buzz. I don't think that happens. I think he'll settle into the middle of the first round. Should be right in the range of the Nuggets at 21. Should be right in that range.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, I think that's it here. I mean, I think it'd be a nice pick. I just think he's a player, man. Like, the number one thing I want in a player, if I had to just pick one attribute, is just IQ, feel for the game. Like those two things go hand in hand for me. And Jalen Williams, it seems like he just knows how to play. It seems like he could give some Denver something from his rookie year. I don't think he needs to, like, be a guy you put in the G League for an entire season. So I like it.
Yeah. And I think you start to extrapolate the young guys with Yoke. Let's say you have a young guys lineup that features Bones, Zeke, Jalen Williams, and Jokic. Like, I kind of like it. I'm like, okay, you got two great ball handlers and you got a floor spacer. You know, you've got some length. You got weird measurables all across the board. They all have weird defensive pluses. So I'm a big fan. This is, but of the two guys, it's my favorite. Even though defensively it doesn't plug the need that Denver needs, or might not plug the need. I just love it. You guys know that he's a Lonzo Ball-esque player to me.
Like, oh, God. There we go.
Wait, what?
We were off.
Waited until an hour three. He doesn't play like Lonzo.
I'm just saying, he sees the game. Like, got players. Bones is this way. Like, players that see the game, I'm like, oh, man, Yoke's going
to
love this.
Dude, we were off air, and Wynn's like, I can't wait for Adam to start watching. And 10 seconds into the scout. Oh, I love this guy.
Yeah. When you're around somebody enough, you just know the types of draft prospects you're going to like.
We've all got our types.
I love mine, this total Adam guy. Eric, I'm curious. Eric guy?
I don't know. Dude. I haven't watched these. I was busy making graphics.
To look at now? Tari or Jalen?
I mean, the ways you guys have been talking about Jalen, he sounds incredible. Tari sounds just like like he sounds just like a defensive stalwart, which aren't they're not fun to scout. Like, but that sounds like the guy that we need. Whenever I am scouting guys, I'm always watching just their mechanics, like the way that they like. This is why Quentin Grimes was my guy, and why Desmond Bane was my guy. Like, I love the way the hinge in the shot of Quentin Grimes to me looked like. So,
can I tell you something? I think body control is like underrated, and that's the thing. It is. Like guys that have good shooting form or whatever, it's like they have good body control. They get their body to do the thing they're trying.
Yeah, dude. Anytime I'm looking at new play, this is why I was in love with Bones too. I just love like the way that he so effortlessly goes about in the basketball, and how like readable it is, and how like interesting it is. And again, like the hinge, there's something about like really great shooters, the way that their wrist snaps, that just pops to me. I don't know. So I need to watch. I haven't watched. I'll do that.
Vote, pick between the two. They're both available at 21.
I'm more intrigued by Jalen, but I think Tari.
Are we all Tim Conley?
Yeah, dude, that's the problem.
Draft room, and we're like, you know, it'd be awesome.
I'm kind of like, you guys should draft Bones again.
You know, it'd be so dope.
I mean, look, it's the philosophy thing. Best, I think Tari is a better fit. That's the best way I can put it.
I'm telling you, there's just so many good defenders that get drafted, and for that, they're like, and then they just suck because they have no basketball skill. I don't think Tari's that guy. His production matters a lot, but both of them might go ahead. Well, that does it. Do you have anything else, Harrison? You want to put a bow on this? You've scouted these guys more than anyone.
I mean, I've spent like one day on these guys. So well. I don't know if that's that much more than you. No, I think they'd both be good fits in Denver. Like, That's what I was looking to kind of find in these first few guys that we looked at, just guys who Denver would draft, and you'd look at them and go, okay, like I feel good about that. Like that would be solid. This guy would bring something to the table that could really help the Nuggets this season. I think both definitely fit that bill. The last thing on Jalen Williams, I don't know if you guys see this. My style comp with him is Jeff Green. I see a lot of Jeff Green in his game. Just kind of like younger Jeff Green, not the Jeff Green that we saw this season. The younger Jeff Green.
The only Jeff Green we've had.
Like he coasts, and then it's punctuated by like, how did you do that? Like,
no, like he doesn't have a pick like, and roll fill though. That like Jalen Green never was a pick and roll guy like that.
Jeff Green? Earlier in his career, he handled the ball a lot. Jeff Green did in Boston.
A lot of isolation, a lot of like old school basketball. I don't know.
I see a lot of just similarities in like their athleticism and how they run and like their passing too. I think there's something there.
Which of the two do you think would make more of an impact next season?
Tari
Eason.
Tari.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm going to say Jalen.
I think the Nuggets have, they've got their playmakers and their finishers, man, you know?
They've also got a lot of power forwards. All right, that does it for today. Hit the like button on the way out. Tomorrow, we may or may not be at a different time. I think the presser's in the morning, so we'll probably be at the same time, but might have to be a little bit flexible. Very curious to hear from Josh Kroenke. Should be a good one, and we'll continue, obviously, in our off-season grind. Hope you guys enjoyed that show. We'll see you guys next time.